Good day, and thanks for tuning in this weekend edition of Radio On The Go News from the Radio On The Go newsroom in Hampton. I'm Sean Dietz reporting. U.S. Marshals arrested a man in Iowa who is wanted on a first-degree murder charge in Washington. A press release from the U.S. Marshals Service says 35-year-old Mickey Wade Wheatley is wanted in Okanogan County in connection with the death of an infant in Tonasket, Washington, that is. The U.S. Marshals Service in Eastern Washington contacted the Northern District of Iowa on January 28th for assistance in locating Wheatley, believing he was living in Iowa. Members of the Northern Iowa Fugitive Task Force followed up on leads and determined he was residing in Hardin County. Officers narrowed their search to an area in rural Hardin County and approached Wheatley shortly after 9 o'clock Friday morning in the 700 block of Ellsworth Avenue in Iowa Falls. He was taken into custody without incident and transported to the Hardin County Jail in Eldora. Wheatley will remain in custody while he awaits extradition back to the state of Washington. In other news, here in the state of Iowa, Governor Kim Reynolds has introduced legislation in the Iowa House and Senate that would codify an executive order condemning anti-Semitism in Iowa's public K-12 schools, community colleges, and state universities. Under the proposal, public schools, community colleges, and state universities would be required to submit an annual report detailing anti-Semitic actions, along with the findings and outcomes of any related investigations. Reynolds says the legislation sends a clear message that anti-Semitism should not be tolerated in Iowa and that the state fully supports its Jewish community. The bill builds on the governor's 13th executive order signed on June 30th of last year, which directed the Iowa Board of Regents to cooperate with the U.S. Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights to ensure state universities meet their obligations under Title VI of the Civil Rights Act to protect Jewish students. In November of last year, Iowa's three state universities reported 10 formal complaints of anti-Semitism and 34 informal complaints. Turning the page to local news, First Bank Hampton hosted their annual Ag Outlook meeting on Friday. About 35 people were in attendance for a look at economic and policy issues affecting Iowa agriculture. Iowa State University economist Chad Hart discussed grain supply and use, global crop production, export trends, meat production, biodiesel demand, and crop price projections, comparing 2025 data with previous years and offering forecasts for 2026 and 2027. Hart noted that while flooding and issues like southern rust impacted some fields in Iowa, overall production held up well in 2025.
Well, we did see some, I think a lot of farmers in this area did experience maybe yields a little bit lighter than what we saw last year. When we look nationwide, it was an incredible crop year. And so, you know, as we look at the national yields for corn and soybeans, both setting records this year nationwide. And most of that record, if you will, came outside of Iowa. Iowa had good growing conditions. A lot of the Great Plains and Southeast had phenomenal growing conditions.
Hart says abundant supplies in the U.S. and overseas markets are helping push grain prices below the highs seen in recent years.
You can look back over the past 5 years for corn and soybeans, and what we've had is really strong production nationwide. And so typically when supplies are high, prices tend to go lower. But when you combine our growth in production along with what we're seeing outside the U.S., for example, in the soybean market, Brazil continues to grow soybeans at an incredible clip as well. So that's, again, putting downward pressure on prices. And then you got to look at where are we selling more product to or where can we? You brought up China. The idea is, yeah, they're not a big market for us in corn because they grow a lot of corn. On the other hand, they've traditionally been our biggest market for soybeans, but now they're shifting more of those sales to Brazil because Brazil also has a lot of beans.
State Representative Shannon Latham of Sheffield was also in attendance and provided an update on the 2026 legislative session, including ongoing discussions on eminent domain and proposed property tax reform measures. Well, speaking of taxes, with tax filing season underway, the Iowa Department of Revenue is reminding Iowans of resources available to help with filing state income tax returns. The department began processing individual income tax returns on January 26th. That's the same day as the IRS. Iowa taxpayers are required to file their federal return with their Iowa return, and state income tax returns are due April 30th. Officials say the department's website at revenue.iowa.gov provides access to tax forms, guidance, and step-by-step filing instructions, including expanded directions for completing the Iowa 1040 and information on tax year 2025 changes, such as the new 3.8% flat income tax rate. The department also offers online tools to help avoid common filing mistakes, track refunds, and understand the filing process. Last year, refund processing averaged 30 days or less. Taxpayers can also use GovConnect Iowa's virtual assistant called The Colonel, which is available 24/7 to answer general tax and licensing questions. More information is available at govconnect.iowa.gov. Well, a proposal currently in the Iowa House would expand educational opportunities at the state's 15 community colleges. House Study Bill 533, which was introduced by Republican Representative Taylor Collins, would allow community colleges to offer bachelor's degrees in areas of high demand, focusing on sustained and unmet workforce needs. Each of the state's community colleges are governed locally by an elected board of trustees. Emily Shields with Community Colleges for Iowa explains local boards would be responsible for developing new degree programs.
Each of those colleges would look at the workforce needs in their region and determine needs around bachelor's degrees. And then in terms of sequencing, it would really depend on the resources available to start a program.
Critics of the measure include the Iowa Association of Independent Colleges and Universities, which maintains that some private colleges will likely close if the bill passes. However, supporters point to the state's persistent workforce gaps in IT, healthcare, and high-tech manufacturing. Research shows rural populations face large education deserts, forcing students into expensive choices like relocating, paying higher private tuition, or not seeking education beyond an associate's degree. The act would allow community colleges to charge bachelor's degree students up to 1.5 times current tuition rates. Shields says even with the increase, community colleges will remain the most affordable option. Nationally, more than 200 community colleges offer bachelor's degrees in 24 states. Well, turning the page to local government news, the Grundy County Board of Supervisors will meet in regular session on Monday. The board will receive an update from County Engineer Jeff Skalberg, and the board will consider a bridge inspection and rating program. In other business, the board will set the date for a public hearing on the fiscal year 2026 budget amendment. The board will also discuss and consider possible action regarding recommendations from the Compensation Board. Grundy County Board of Supervisors meet Monday morning, 9 o'clock at the courthouse in Grundy Center. The Belmont City Council will also meet on Monday. They'll consider several items related to city projects and finances. In new business, council members in Belmont are set to review and approve supplemental agreements with Veenstra and Kim for the 3rd Street Northeast project and the Aquatic Center project. The council there will also consider a resolution which sets a public hearing date of April 6th for the property tax levy maximums for fiscal year 27. Additionally, members will review and potentially approve a residential tax abatement for a residence at 215 7th Avenue Southeast. The meeting will also include annual reports from the Belmont Police and Fire Departments. The Belmont City Council meets Monday night, 7 p.m. at City Hall. The Clarksville City Council will meet in regular session on Monday. Mayor Gerald Hoyer will provide an update on nuisance properties and discuss abatement properties and will discuss a home and industry home occupation application. In new business, the Clarksville Council will consider advertising and hiring for a seasonal mowing position. The council will discuss adding licensing and inspection of rental properties to ordinances. The council will also take action on Henry Vance leasing land for farm use and take action on commercial club contributions. The Clarksville City Council meets Monday evening, 6:30 p.m. at City Hall. And finally, Rockwell Mayor Larry Wentz is beginning another term after being reelected in November without opposition. Wentz told Radio on the Go News recently his decision to run again came down to continuing projects already underway and keeping the city moving forward.
Talking with my family, my council, the employees, you know, going over what's best for the town, what the interest was in the position, and seeing that there really wasn't any interest out there, you know, just continuing forward with what we were doing in town. And seeing it through, I would rather commit my time to the city than something else. So I was able to say, yep, let's keep moving forward. We'll keep continuing on with where we're at. So, you know, I'd rather see the city move forward with the plans we have. And we have a lot we want to get done with the sidewalks, with streets, with, you know, other projects. And I'd rather say, yep, 2 more years and we'll go from there.
During Wentz's previous term, a powerful storm last July caused widespread damage across Rockwell, blocking nearly every street with downed trees, knocking out power and internet service, and damaging city property, including trees and headstones at Lindgrove Cemetery. Wentz credits a strong community response for the rapid cleanup with residents, city crews, county officials, and outside tree companies working together to restore the town.
The chainsaws kicked off 5 o'clock in the morning, and everybody was out helping each other, getting everybody's properties cleaned up, The city guys were out with the trucks getting roads cleaned up and worked with county executives to get all the resources I needed from the state and the county to get trucks here, to get the trees out of our temporary dump and off to, you know, the burning locations that we needed so we can get the town cleaned up. So we had other tree companies come in, help with the cemetery. We had 127 city-owned trees either removed or trimmed, and it was a lot of moving parts to get it done.
Wentz says infrastructure funding will be a key issue to watch during the 2026 Iowa legislative session, especially when it comes to bridge and culvert projects that are costly for small towns to maintain. He adds that continued community input will remain important as the city plans future improvements. That's all for now. There's more online at radioonthego.com. We invite you to follow our social media channels. We're at Radio On The Go on Facebook, X, and YouTube. Stay tuned. We'll have a look at your regional weather forecast coming up next and funeral announcements as well. Reporting from the Radio On The Go newsroom in Hampton, I'm Sean Dietz, wishing you a happy weekend.